snow tomorrow, so we're going to get to see how that plays out. I think we're going to take some sleds and go over to a hill nearby.
Yeah.
Me and the kids go over and tear up a hill.
You and Keith tear up a hill, or see an old man get put in trash. And
it's huge. It's like it's like a quarter mile down to the bottom of the hill. It's huge. But we've done it a few years. Yeah. But anyway, so how you doing? How's your week been?
I haven't been doing too much. A lot of things that we were going to do, I got called off because of the weather. You know, expecting bad weather.
Right.
So I just been at home, cooking dinner. Things I made, beef bouillon.
Right.
It's my style. You know,
with just vino sauce, wine sauce.
Yeah, wine sauce and everything. I had to didn't have the pearl onions, so I just used the regular onions and scallions.
Yeah.
And onions, It came out pretty well. I think.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, I think this may be the second time or third time I've made it. I think I'm getting the real feel of how to make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, nice. Yeah, it's, man. And I'm drinking this. I don't drink coffee usually.
Mm.
And I'm drinking one of these double shot
energy. Double shot energies.
Yeah, and I've had two. I'm about to jump out of my skin.
Yeah, something well at 10:30 at night. So
yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who needs to sleep?
It'll be all right.
Yeah.
Now, I think we've got a couple of issues we're going to talk about tonight. Here, let me kick this off real fast. I didn't think about that. So let's start here. And there we go. So, in case we want to check anything, and I don't know that we're just going to dig through things really. I think we got a couple of topics we're going to talk about, but so you want to introduce it? You want me to introduce it? What do you think?
You're always good at introducing things. Yeah, go ahead and kick us off.
All right. So there is a noticeable situation going on with the latest crop of kids in this country, in this latest generation.
You don't say.
Yeah, and that's something that I think people say a lot, right? It's always the kids these days, and everybody thinks something's gone wrong with the latest generation. This seems a little different.
Mm.
This doesn't seem to be just a
with the old man yelling at the clouds type of situation.
Right.
This
this isn't these young whippersnappers just don't get the way I grew up type situation. There seems to be like an epidemic of parental challenges going on, right? We have educators quitting in droves, saying that kids are terrors and it's not acceptable. They can't keep working with them. There are tons of kids that their ability to read and write is limited.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Motor skills, issues with motor skills and like it just all sorts of stuff. Like we were talking about, it gets down, I think, I don't know. And while I don't want to just sit here and judge a generation or anybody, I think I have children and I've noticed this, like when you go out, you're in public and whether you're, this is when you're sitting at a restaurant and you've got a family of six sitting across the room from you and they're all staring at iPhones or iPads and nobody's talking. And I get it. I get that they might want a break, but that's not something that used to exist, right? Yeah. At least not that I recall seeing. And certainly not at the level that we're seeing it today.
I'm just kind of wondering, is that like the litmus test, for a parent, like when they take their child out, in public for the first time, you know, see how they react or act, especially at a restaurant, because I've been in a few restaurants too. Where
is there a litmus test? What do you mean?
Yeah, well, you know, you taught your kid to behave, but when I get out in public, you know, it's kind of a different thing. Like, you know, in my experience, like, you'll see a kid sitting, like a well-behaved kid, you know, sitting in his chair, mm-hmm. eating his food, mm-hmm. not disturbing anybody. Now, his parents say, you know, don't do that. They don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and they continue about what they're doing. Now, on the other hand, this has been my experience, mm-hmm. where you have the parents, they have three kids. You're sitting in a restaurant.
The kids, rice starts flying.
Well, no, not that bad, but the kids are running around, and, you know, they're running around in circles, they're running around the aisles, and the parents are sitting there eating their food like nothing's happening. It's like your kids in the buffet.
Well, in the tray. In that situation, it's really obvious why they're doing it. It's because they can. The litmus test, I don't know that there's a litmus test per se, but multiple times we had people that would compliment us or thank us, that we'd come by and say, you know, when you guys came in, you know, you had three kids with you, we were concerned, but actually your kids are really well behaved. And I'm like, they're just hungry.
That sounds like a pass. That's a pass.
Right. Well, I think this comes down to, and I guess we'll have to get into some of my parenting opinion here, but, you know, I think it makes sense to kind of talk about how the different generations have played out, you know, like we were mentioning a bit ago. You know, you've got the generations, because we're talking right now about specifically Gen Z and Gen Alpha. So the iPad generation, or the Gen Alpha and Gen Z belong to millennials and Gen Xers that had kids late. And so if we go back even further, because there's a whole slew of ground to cover in this, right? There's the aspect of what's going on with the kids. Why are the kids having such a hard time? Why are they having a hard time behaving themselves? Why are they so difficult to control? Why are they so boisterous? Why do they, you know, why do, you know, all of that. And then there's the element of what's going on, right? What's going on at a generational level? And so I'm Gen X. We're Gen X. And I had kids late, right? Mm. So I say late. I waited late for Tennessee standards. I didn't have kids at 18, 19, or 20 years old. I waited until around 30 to have children. And the result of that was I saw a lot of people in our age group that started having kids about 10 years before we did. And I want to say this was on purpose. This was more a function of just life. It wasn't like I necessarily just said, hey, we're going to wait. It's just the way life played out, you know, career and all that stuff, college and, you know, military and all that. The years started rolling by. And so by the time I was in a position, by the time we got married, I was, you know, 26, 27, and then, you know, have kids, first one at 28, almost 29, second one at 30.
Yeah, that's one. Pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, and it the way that it played out, just sort of, I didn't realize. It may be a direct function or a direct result of it, but I did a lot of maturing in my 20s, right?
Yeah, and I think that's what is a good, just in my opinion, that 30 is typically where you're more established, like you have a, you know, a good understanding of the world, you know, typically if you are on the path to college, you know, you graduate, you know, 23, you know, then you get to experience the world a little bit, you establish yourself. Mm-hmm. Maybe get some credit, you know, and, you know, you're actually prepared to have kids.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, 30 is a good age.
Yeah, you've got some life experience. You know, I don't think you don't have wisdom by the tail just yet, but you're on the path, right?
Probably got some of that partying out of your system.
Right, you got some of the partying out of your system. You're a little less volatile, a little less reactive, a little more, contemplative, you know, you think things through a little bit more. And so as a result, I remember having friends that we ended up having to tell them they couldn't bring their kids over to our house because their kids would come over and start throwing candles down the stairs to see if they could break them. And I mean, just, and it was, in some situations, it was always the same thing. Like, you're going to get a spanking, and then nothing, right? It's just, and at one point I'm like, you know, you've threatened to spank him like 6 times. Oh, well, he listens. No, that's not what he's doing. He is definitely not listening. He's doing a lot, but that's not one of the
You definitely failed the test. You failed the test.
Well, it showed us, like, I remember my kid's mom looking at me and saying, we will never have a kid like that. And, I think this, let's go where I mentioned for a second. Let's talk about generations, because there is a huge component in this of the concept of, let's say, like, gentle parenting versus passive parenting versus active parenting versus authoritative parenting, right? And gentle parenting would be something like, you know, hey, we've got to do this, you know, give us a few minutes, and you know, well, we do have to get this done, so okay, I'll give you a few minutes, but then we're going up there, or I'm taking you up there and we're going to get it taken care of. Active parenting would be a combination of active listening and not being forceful necessarily, but just assertively parenting. No, I said the answer's no. Go take care of it, please. Thanks. And then you've got permissive parenting, which is go clean your room. Oh, but I'm in the middle of a video game. Can I just have another hour? I've already given you 3. And it's like, okay, just let me know when you're done. Not just completely permissive, you know, just letting them make the decisions and not wielding authority. And then the last one, which 3 did I cover? I covered active, permissive, and so the last active, permissive. Yeah, and so the last one would be, which one? I don't remember what I said. I don't remember at all.
Yeah, active and permissive, and then there's, you know, the iPad generation where you just let.
Yeah. But it's more authoritative. That was the one, and authoritative. Yeah. And so one of the things that I've heard, because authoritative often gets confused for active, and it often gets like diametrically opposed to gentle parenting, right? Mm-hmm. Like authoritative would be something like, you know, I'm the parent and I said so, or I've told you over and over and I'm getting sick of this, and it just being very forceful and wielding authority and not really taking time to explain, to consider kids' feelings. That said, if they're standing in the middle of an interstate, I mean, yell, right? I mean, you don't have a debate over whether or not they need to move. But there comes this sort of broadens into a conversation about, in my opinion, generational patterns, generational trauma, appropriate parenting. You know, what we were talking about earlier, we talked about going back to your parents' generation. You know, your parents were the middle generation, you know, just after World War One, in between World War One and World War Two.
Yeah, like the 30s and 40s.
1930s. And because your dad and I talked about this the other day. And then you get to the great generation, the generation that went to war and the moms were working and the America war machine was spun up, and they came back, and they came back with a mandate to repopulate the country. And many of them had many kids. My grandfather was one of 12 kids. So it was very, it was big. However, with the economy and all of the challenges going on globally at the time, but specifically in the United States, they were very poor. And, you know, my grandfather had to quit. And he quit school in 8th grade.
Yeah,
to work in the fields. He didn't have a choice. He was number 11 of 12 kids, and now he eventually went to business college and you know, went out and made a career. He's an incredible salesman. But it's interesting because one of the let me finish carrying that through. Then the Great Generation gives birth to the baby boomers. And the baby boomer, no, I'm getting this mixed up. I think the Great Generation is after World War One, and then the middle generation is running right up to World War II. And then the middle generation, the middle generation has the baby boomers. The baby boomers have Gen Xers, us, and then Gen Xers have millennials. Millennials have Gen Z. Gen Z has Gen Alpha. And so that jumping to the baby boomers. The baby boomers grew up with very no nonsense parents that, you know, had dealt with a lot of the harsh realities of the country, and they were very authoritative. It was children were very were expected to be seen and not heard. It was sort of a you don't do you stay out of the way.
Yeah. You just do what I say.
Yes, I do. You do what I say because I said so, or you can go get a switch off the tree and bring it in. And if it's not big enough, I'll go pick my own and I'll pick a branch. And so it's this. I mean, I'm serious. I grew up hearing tons of stories about switch. I've had to pick switches off the trees.
Me too.
Right. And so the baby boomers get it honest, right? I'm not saying it's okay. Right? I'm definitely not trying to excuse abuse, trauma, anything like that. I'm just saying that they were handled very, very harshly and very forcibly. The Gen X, then we come in, and you know, you and I are on the tail end of X, where we're right up against millennials, like within two or three years. And the the baby boomers had their parents as a model, and although they tried to do things differently from their parents, what survived was the whole concept of spare the rod, spoil a child. And obviously I can't speak for the entire generation, right? I'm sure there are parents in New York that were not this way, but I'm painting with broad strokes, but the experience that I've seen, they were traumatized, right? The boomers were just, it was very much, you mind your place, you stay out of sight and out of mind, and you know, but they were always right there. They were just there being well behaved. It wasn't like they just ran off and did their own thing all the time.
Right. Yeah, I think their parents were definitely hard on them. Like, I mean, I can only use my dad as an example. You know, he was, you know, he'll admit he was like bad. He would say he got a whipping every day. Mm-hmm. You know, and through that, you know, he was well behaved, you know, went through the military and everything, you know, good husband, good father, everything. But one thing, when I was growing up, he would never whip us, you know, because of all the whippings he got. And I think that plays into, you know, either type of trauma. I wouldn't say trauma, but, you know, if you got enough whippings, then you know how it feels, so you don't want to put that punishment, you know, on your kids. And I think that's what a lot of people from my generation, you know, in our generation too, you know, feel now.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mother, she did all the whipping. Yeah. And my grandmother, she helped out.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, my granny definitely.
Yeah, she tagged me in, you know, right. go get a switch.
Right. Yeah, my switch broke. Go grab me another one. Yeah.
Get a thicker one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that is something that I think plays a part in all the parents, you know, how they grow up and everything.
Right.
They just pass that on generationally, you know. You know, there's a lot to be said. I don't want to go too far off topic, you know, or until we get to that point. But
you're fine.
I think when we're, you know, I can't say as a parent because I'm, you know, not a parent or anything.
Yeah, but you were a kid.
Yeah.
You know?
I was a kid.
I think everybody's qualified to at least discuss parenting. You were a kid at some point. You had parents. Yeah. You have parents. So.
Yeah. That's good. Everybody should know that they have parents.
Right. Just in case it was in doubt.
Not an alien, I swear.
Right. Or test tube. Yeah. Test not test tube, baby.
I got a belly button.
Well, yeah, so here comes Gen X, and baby boomers were a lot like their parents. I think they were pretty harsh. You know, they were very authoritative, and it was very much a concept, at least in the area in my family, of spare the rod, spoil the child. Mm-hmm. And spankings were were regular. And so when I had kids, I was determined I was not doing that to my kids. I didn't want to pass on that trauma.
Right.
And so I was very particular. I did spank. One of them, the oldest one, I had to spank, I don't know, two or three times, maybe something like maybe five throughout his life. I don't know. It wasn't many. The middle one never had to spank.
Yeah. Those look off like they were younger. They didn't really know any better.
I'm talking about when they're younger because it's I think that spanking is a recourse for a kid that's not old enough to rationalize and old enough to talk and old enough to reason at a maturity level that you need to meet the situation, right? It's like, you know, if they keep wandering into the street and they're 4 years old. Now, I say that. I wouldn't have spanked my... I'll give you the example of the first time I spanked my kid. How about that? Does that sound good?
Okay, yeah, go with story time.
Okay, so I walk into the living room. My kids are 2.5 years apart. This is the first two. And I walk in, and my oldest son, who at this point is 3.5, about to be 4, I see like a freeze frame. I see him standing over the bouncy little saucer thing we had the one-year-old in. He's 10 months, 9 months, 10 months, something like that. Standing over the saucer with a swing line stapler over his head. In the process of bringing it down on top of his brother, right? Hold on, did I spank him for this? No. This may be a bad example. I don't think that's what... This is the first time I get angry at him. But it's a good example of, you know...
Yeah.
And so, because if you'd asked me the day before, I think I would have told you I could never even get angry at him.
It's funny. Your kid was trying to think, like, oh, there can only be one at that time.
Man, I teleported across that room. I literally just... I don't know how I did it. I caught it before that. I mean, and I caught my hand just under it on my youngest son's forehead. And I remember picking him up. I reached down and I picked him up and I looked at him and I thought, too mad, right? Like too mad. And so I walked over, I walked him into his room, I set him down and I said, stay there. And I went in the other room and I calmed down and I went back and I talked with him. So this was a bad example because I don't think I spanked him. But when they got to be, so I brought up a story.
I mean, to even take that in the context, like, you know, that's good. Like, you didn't spank them or punish them while you were angry.
Well, actually, that's one thing that I can say is I've never spanked or laid a hand. I've never hit any of my children in anger. Never. Not once. I've never hit them upset. I've never hit them frustrated. And I say hit. I didn't. It's not hitting. It's not the same thing. If you have a situation where you've said not to do something multiple times and they're just refusing to register the severity of what you are telling them to do.
Yeah, like taking a fork and sticking it in a toaster or a socket.
Whatever the situation. Yeah, especially in that. Yeah. Yes. But that would be a one-time thing that we have to do something about. But let's say it's something like jumping on the couch and you know, on tile floors, and you're worried that somebody's going to get their head split open, and they've come close a couple of times, and you've told them 3 times, and so the last, you're just like, look, this is the last time. The next time, there's going to be, you've already introduced a consequence on the first two steps, and they are still continuing. The first time you said in timeout, the second time he had to sit in timeout longer. The next time you do this is because it's just a consequence of not thinking or not being old enough to control yourself yet. And so the next time, you're going to get a spanking. And so when it happens, it's like, son, I told you, go up to your room and wait. Goes up there, sits down. If I'm upset, if I have gotten upset, then you calm down. And I go upstairs, and you get down on your knees in front of him and sit down, and you say, why are you here? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Getting a spanking. Why are you getting a spanking? Because I kept ignoring what you were saying. What should you have done? We should have done this. All right, take a second. Let me know when you're ready. And when he says, and I had one that would say, okay, I'm ready. The other one would just wring his hands and it would be like, okay, if you don't make the decision, I'm going to make the decision for you. And you stand up, you take your hand, you pop them a couple of times. They start crying. You pick them up, you hug them and you say, look, I love you. I don't ever want to do this. Let's not put ourselves in this situation again.
Yeah.
It's a tool for teaching. And like I said, I had my oldest son, it may have only been like 3 times that I ever had to do anything like this. But every time it's calm, It's loving. It's a consequence.
Yeah.
It's not a, oh, you defied my authority, right? That's not what's going on. It's not the intent in its own love. And so,
yeah, I mean, I think that's really important. Like, I think a lot of parents, like, I can't remember, you know, well, I know why I was being spanked, but when you take the parents, you know, when they're talking to the kids, it's always important for them to understand why. If they can articulate why they're being punished, then, you know, it sets a better example. So they know not to do it again, you know, but at that age where they're not, you know, fully aware of what they're doing, you know, that's going to be the answer. Like, so they don't, you know, touch a hot stove or anything.
Right.
You know, I think that gets into something else psychological. Like, like they tell you something, you believe it, you know, at least until you're an adult and know better.
Yeah. Well, my dad was over at our house one day when my oldest was the only child, and we're grilling, and my oldest son walks up and puts his hands up on top of the grill. I mean, the grill, puts his hands up on top of the stove and touches a hot iron. Mm-hmm. And he yells and jumps back, and we have to run it underwater. And my dad's like, are you going to put something up to stop him? And I was like, why? He said, because he doesn't do it again. I said, if he does it again, we've got a much bigger problem than a stove, right? The stove is not a problem. Yeah. I was like, I think he learned the lesson. I think he learned it. But it's the idea that you are attempting, you're collaborating with your kids to help them grow and learn. And there's an interesting, you know, I learned something interesting from being a parent. You know, children, and I someone gave me this advice when I was younger, and I don't know who, I don't remember who it was, but it turned out to be one of the truest things I've ever seen. Consequences aren't there for you, right? Consequences aren't there to prevent your couch from getting damaged or to prevent, now you might have rules in place for that, but that's not the function of a consequence. A consequence lets a child know that when they do something they are not supposed to do, there will be a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as natural as any other rule of the jungle or law of the jungle, you know what I mean? And so if you have a kid that constantly steps across lines and boundaries and does not receive consequences, I would argue that you are psychologically harming the child, because you're, it's proven that children that do not have any sort of consequences for poor behavior, for breaking rules, for stepping out of the boundaries, they have hard times feeling safe. It ends up creating safety issues with them, and not just safety issues in the house or safety issues with, it's safety issues with, I don't know that there is, that it's almost like there's no natural order being imposed. A kid needs to have feedback on what's going on. Now, I don't think you should yell or beat them over that, right? That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm just saying that it's a labor of love. I mean, that parenting is teaching children to manage their own consequences.
Yeah.
And if you've done it right, by the time you have adult children, they impose consequences on themselves. All right? Yeah, I spent too much time on a game the other day, and I'm taking a couple days off, just trying to get some other stuff that I should have been done taking care of. Because life is a balancing act. It's a seesaw of self-imposed consequences, short-term sacrifice for long-term gain.
Yeah, I think that's what you do as a parent. You teach their kids that, you know, so even if they don't understand it now when they're young, you know, eventually, hopefully, if you've ingrained in them, you know, enough, then when they're adults, they'll remember those lessons. You know?
Right. I've always looked at it like as a parent, whatever skills, abilities, rules you don't teach your children, the world is going to teach them for you.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem is the world doesn't love them.
Mm-mm.
The world may kill them teaching them these lessons. That's the point of parenting, is to sandbox them and teach them these things. And so, you know, as I got into parenting, it really opened my eyes with my parents. For example, I believe I started off as an authoritative parent. And I mean, for the first, and it's hard to say for the first couple of years, because the first couple of years, there wasn't much discipline other than yes and, you know, no, don't do that, you know, there wasn't, it's not like there were any hardcore consequences needed for a three-year-old, right? It was just, no, we're not going to do that, and, you know, that's not how we do this. But it took until I had a child that I had a genuine struggle with. And what I mean is one that genuinely scared me, right? Like where I was like, I'm afraid that the consequences that he's going to face by not towing his own line and not managing himself and is going to be so severe that it's going to spin out of control and cause consequences that he can't undo. And I think at first I started going authoritative, right? Like, what are you doing? You know, what is the matter with you? We've told you over and over. But it was very clear this isn't working, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not angry. I'm scared, right? It's not the same thing. It taught me a lot. It taught me that my parents confused a lack of anger control, lack of anger management with angry parenting with authority, and wielded it as if it were authority, appropriate authority, which is very, what's the word, traumatizing, discombobulating, it's confusing, it's traumatizing.
Yeah, psychologically abusive, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, so how do you think that ties into, like, you know, the pervasive parenting and, like, how Generation Alpha...
Permissive. You know,
Yeah,
well, I think we have a generation of kids that the reason they're called the iPad kids or iPad generation or iPad kids, I guess, is because from a very young age, they've been raised on iPads, right? They've had devices stuck in their face. And I'm sure there's a whole slew of reasons. I'm sure it's some complicated intersection, some complex intersection of parents not having time, parents having to work extra to make up for all sorts of issues, you know, not to mention even economic and so, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's part of it too, yeah, definitely.
And the iPad being such a good distraction.
It's easy.
And especially with divorce rates increasing, single-parent homes increasing, it's very easy to get trapped in a cycle of, I just need time. I need some time. And hopefully it's not just, I need me time, which, yeah, you need me time, but that's what bedtimes are for, right? They serve more than one purpose. They go to bed at 8 o'clock and you get an hour or two off before bed. It's sort of a decompressed time. But the permissive is just letting them do whatever as long as they stay out from underfoot.
Right, as long as they're not in your way, disturbing your time.
That's right.
That's not parenting.
That's not a lot of things. It's not just not parenting. You're right. It's not parenting, but it's also not relationship.
Yeah.
And you're not teaching children. Now, it may very well be because the parent doesn't know how to do that, right? And, you know, I struggled with this a lot. With my family and what I was willing to allow my children to be subjected to around my family. Mm-hmm. And there is, as a parent, you have to be able to draw lines. But what really broke it for me was at a certain point when I was just trying to understand, I looked at the way I was parenting, and I looked at my kids and how they're developing, and I realized that I had learned a lot from my parents, even though a lot of it had been difficult. And let's be real, it was very traumatic. But I went to my grandparents, and I said, help me understand. Help me understand, because I'm struggling with this. And I heard very consistently from multiple grandparents. I was very fortunate to have grandparents until old age. And yes. I still have grandparents, thankfully. And each one of them that I asked said, I would suggest that you go a little, you know, go easier on your parents. I would suggest you seek ways to forgive and ways to... Now, there are obvious limits to this, right? I wouldn't try to encourage someone to step back into abuse right? Physical abuse, sexual abuse. I don't think that something that's detrimental to the individual should be just walked off, like, you know, walk it off, champ. That's not what I'm saying. But it did help me to understand that they got as good as they gave. And it may have been a situation that they just didn't know. Case in point, my mom had me at 20. All right, so.
Yeah, it's a very young age.
I was a full 10 years older. And there are parents that it happens much earlier, right? There are parents that it happens at 15, 16, 16 17, yeah. 18. And that's a situation of kids raising kids. And hopefully they have support and help from older family members. But that's, I think the temptation is to not fully understand the if you grew up in a toxic environment, it's very easy to feel like a toxic environment is what was necessary, especially if you turned out okay.
Right.
If you came out of it for the better, then it can be I think most parents generally look at their kids and say, I want to do it differently than my parents did. Mm-hmm. That seems to be something that sounds, no matter which generation I talk to about this, they all say that. Everybody says that. I just didn't want to do it the way my parents did, or I wanted to do it differently. Yet every once in a while, you'll hear someone say something like, my parents were amazing. But for the most part, I had traumatic experiences and I didn't want to pass that on to my kids. So they didn't pass those on, but they did pass others on. And they tend to look at it like, oh, you know, they'll live. It's okay. I made it through much worse. And that's not, I think that we have a lot of millennials and probably late Gen Xers who saw that, who were raised very authoritatively, very harshly. And they said, I'm just not going to do that. And due to probably a complex intersection of reasons, ended up being more permissive than any type of active or and it could, like I said, it could be because there was so much trauma and dysfunction in the relationship that they had that they just didn't understand. For example, if there's high levels of narcissism in the home, right? That is a really hard generational thing to escape, because that then you get into your risk reward systems, your that's when you end up in feedback loops where, but I need to feel loved and I expect to be loved in the way that I feel love, but the only way that I was taught to love was this, and it just creates this feedback loop of toxicity.
Yeah, I think I was mentioning that, like how we talked about generational curses and things where you're just passing on trauma from, you know, from your parents to you, to your kids, you know, their kids to their kids. At some point you have to break it, you know, then if you can, you know, you have to forgive that person, because you're not really forgiving it for them. It's for your own sake, for you to move on.
I agree. And it doesn't have to be to their face. But when you don't forgive somebody, you carry that chip around on you. Yeah, that's your burden.
Yeah, you need to forgive yourself, even if that, you know, abuse, like, it's not your fault.
Even if there was abuse, I think there is a significant value to coming to a place to where you can say, you know what, I'm going to just accept that it happened to them, they didn't know the impact it would have, or they just, and if it's a situation where they're still doing it, you know, that kind of gets into the next topic we're going to touch on, but it's hard. It's difficult to deal with trauma, because it's sort of like a competition between having my needs met versus having their needs met. And you know, I think it boils down to if the situation's toxic, if it's genuinely toxic, and there's no way to get across the stream, if there's no way to break the toxicity, if you don't hold some, a lot of times, especially if we're talking about the child, a lot of times the child doesn't have the authority, doesn't have the respect, doesn't have the whatever to introduce an armistice and say, look, we're going to stop, and I want to break the toxicity. And so, you know, it can be difficult. It can be difficult to manage those, but it did help me a lot talking and finding out that A, my parents are young, and B, what happened to them was worse. Mm. That put me in a spot where it was like, okay, what happened to my mom? Right? Yeah. Which...
And it just gives you a different perspective.
Which I needed.
Yeah.
I needed that.
I think everybody needs something like that. Yeah.
And I needed that because I needed to understand that... I didn't need details. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that it didn't help me to know what hurt her so badly. It helped me relate to know that she was hurt as well.
Yeah.
Because, and this may be something to do with mom-son dynamic, but it kind of triggered protective feelings. And right. Yeah. Like you did what? Right. Like,
yeah. It's like if you know the problem, then you can actually fix the problem, right?
Yeah. And so there that helped. But and I hate that it helped because I don't mean it like that. It wasn't good. But at the same time, it helped me see that between that, their age, it wasn't intentional, and it wasn't that's how I achieve forgiveness.
Yeah.
And you know, it can be a tricky thing to get, but I, like I said, I had to, I realized afterwards it was me that needed it. So I needed to free myself of the burden of feeling, you know, pigeonholed or feeling stuck or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so my goal with my kids has not been to not do it the way my parents did. My goal with my kids has been to not inflict trauma.
Right.
Which is hard. I mean, parenting's hard, dude. It's really hard. But, you know, that's the way it goes. It's not for the faint of heart.
No. I could say that you did a good job with your kids. And I'm pretty sure they think the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's honestly, I'm not going to act like I'm super dad or anything. I've made tons of mistakes. I've made more than my fair share. But it's, I look at how adjusted they are at the age they're at. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's too bad. Like parents, like you're not going to get 100% right.
No, of course not.
Yeah. So you're going to do the best you can. You love your kids.
Yeah. Like. We are imperfect to put it nicely. Yeah. But you know, if the kids aren't clawing and scraping and fighting to get away at 18, you might have done okay. But I think a lot of that was recognizing that I had been raised with confused on the difference between anger and authority. Mm. Not that you don't ever get angry, but just that you can't ever conflate the two. You don't ever use anger as authority.
That's how you use it. Yeah.
It doesn't help. It's like, you know what? This conversation is not a good idea for either one of us. Mm. We need to go calm down. I want to talk to you in 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's a good. You know? That's how like I think I perceive like things like that. Like I don't want to give anything power over me. If there's something that's triggering me, I want to let that go because I don't want to be triggered just on command.
And it's easy. It's easy to get triggered.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was...
You all have buttons.
Yeah, I was like that. I think we talked about that. I think we've talked about it at least twice, on camera with me until I got into, like, high school. I wasn't fighting, but, you know, it was more like if you did something to me, I was going to go do something to you type thing.
Yeah, well, you chilled out in kindergarten. You weren't a
kindergarten.
You weren't a case. You weren't a case study.
No, you weren't in my class
for criminal negligence.
But yeah, I mean, it was just some of those things. It wasn't until I got to like high school when I was more cognizant of who I was and what my parents were doing. Like, I didn't want to see my mother coming to the school because of something,
right?
You know, it's like, and then it wasn't like something I couldn't handle.
Yeah,
you know, so it was like no point in. Getting in the fights or, and that wasn't like I was causing trouble or anything.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's how I kind of looked at it, and that's how I kind of chilled out. I was more aware of what my parents were doing. They were, you know, both working, you know, they, you know, going from work and coming all the way out there. You know, I guess, too, my grandmother, you know, she played a big role, you know, in shaping, you know, the person that I was because, mm-hmm. you know, both my parents worked, and I'd be home with her, and she was actually the one who taught me how to cook, so we would cook dinner for my parents,
yeah,
you know, and things, and just, you know, teaching you how to be, like, a well-behaved human being, you know, social, mm-hmm. you know. Don't ever let anybody, you know, step on you or anything like that, but, you know, just yeah. be aware of who you are.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah, I wish I would have had a better segue into, I guess, our next topic, if you want to go ahead and get into it.
It's all good. We're so, yeah, so the next one is right on the heels of it. There is a huge, apparently, number of Gen Z, well, I guess it would be millennials, but Gen Z and millennials, so millennials. Later Gen Z and millennials mainly,
hmm.
like our age and just after, that are going no contact with their parents.
Parents, yeah.
And, you know, it's... That's tricky because I know people that have dealt with this and I've been asked to counsel with people like this on this subject, and I've found that the only way to do that is to just listen. I'm not a psychiatrist or anything, or psychologist, I guess is what I was looking for, but there is a large number of people in our generation and in the generation immediately after ours. Sometimes it's Gen Xers with baby boomer parents, and sometimes it's millennials with Gen X parents. But that have said, you know, I have tried for so long to get the toxicity out of this relationship, and I just don't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to wash my hands of this because the burden of carrying it around is too much for me to bear. And I just can't keep doing it. And there are a lot of parents that are going online, apparently on TikTok or Facebook or wherever, and saying, and you'll see the gamut. Some of them say, you know, help me understand. I just don't understand why my kids don't want to talk to me anymore. This doesn't. And some of them are going, you know, they need to grow up and stop, you know, and they're just yeah. very, very clearly,
really,
you know, you need to show respect.
Feeling.
You need to yeah. show respect. And it's this, yeah, you know, I feel this one. I relate.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with it too. I agree. Like you're an adult. Yeah. They should treat you with some type of respect. But I always say, like, you, no matter, you know, what, you should respect your parents. You know they had you, they didn't have to have you, and they at least got you to the point where you can actually leave the house and have a life of yourself.
Yeah. Now, at that point, I do want to delineate, because there are situations where there's not just trauma. There are situations where there's extensive abuse. There's situations where there's extensive neglect. There's situations there's the whole gamut of parenting experiences wrapped into this. So I don't want to marginalize or pigeonhole people that are coming out of bad experiences. If you came out of an abuse, I mean a highly abusive situation.
Yeah, like sexual abuse or anything.
Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah,
yeah. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, right? that's not the type of thing that I think you it's incumbent upon you to march back into and say, we need to settle this. No, yeah. It's not. I refer back to what we were talking about with forgiveness, but that forgiveness isn't for them.
Yeah, that's for you.
And I don't mean that you shouldn't offer it to them if you feel that's what you should do. I'm saying that you need the forgiveness because
yeah.
you can't carry it. It's toxicity. It's just darkness, and carrying that around on your heart it takes a toll. So, you know, being able to walk free of that and find a way to let it go and say, you know, this is the past and this happened. And I think that's critical. And there are a lot of circumstances where that's necessary.
Yeah. You have to just, Yeah, release them.
I think that ideally family structures would be preserved if you can, and people would, and again, not in those circumstances, but in under more less drastic circumstances where it's just tension and, you know, and it's hard to even just group toxicity into this because it's the thing that, like I said, the thing that got it for me was recognizing that's the environment they came out of, right? They got this, honestly, I guess you would say, which well, that's all they know. And it's,
yeah, I mean, that's different. Like what they're doing is they don't know how to parent. They still love you.
Yeah.
Like the abuse that they think that they're giving you is something that they think is going to make you a better person.
Right.
Like they were, that's right. Not the same. Yeah. That's not the same thing that we were talking about. Like there are other things where they don't care anything about you. They've got you. They're using you for a paycheck.
Yeah.
Like I've known people who've had their credit scores just messed up because the parent didn't have credit and they used their social security number to get the credit and messed it up.
Yep.
So yeah, that's something that, well, in that example there with the credit card stuff, hopefully you'll get over that maybe, you know, before that parent actually dies.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to have that carrying around with you. But, you know, the other stuff, like I said, like the sexual abuse and everything. You know, sit down, you just got to forgive yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you can't carry that with you and then expect to go anything into, like, a healthy relationship. And that's why I'm saying, like, generational curses. You're just going to pass that trauma. If you never resolve it within yourself, you're just going to keep passing it along.
Yeah, and if you don't, you will pass on some other manifestation of post-traumatic stress disorder or some other manifestation of toxicity. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because it's sort of, I think there's an identification, recognition, and a maturation process that has to occur in there. I think a person has to, and I think this comes down to speaking to kids and speaking about kids. A core part of a child growing up and child development is, I mean, it's one of the hardest things to do as a parent to figure out how to take these children who are loved and taken care of and tell them how rough this world is.
Yeah, I mean,
it's hard.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
It's hard to know that you have to find a way at some point over the next years to say, look, man, this can be a tough place. But we brought you here because it can be an awesome place.
Yeah.
And because it's sort of this, and that's where I was going with it, it's sort of this concept of not embracing the darkness, but becoming resilient to the darkness, recognizing that bad things happen to good people, and bad things happen, and while I don't want to be flippant and say what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, it is a concept of love is an elixir, love heals, and
yeah, I guess you kind of gotta make them say stronger their convictions.
Sorry, I thought this would be easier to talk about.
yeah. I mean, yeah, that's. I can't imagine how tough that would be, but it's a bad balancing act. And you don't want to poison them, you know, with things that are, you're not true. I think you've done a good job with your kids. Like, they're pretty objective. They know how to think for themselves.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think that every parent has to deal with this. It's my opinion. And so when you end up in a situation where, and a lot of times, there's a song, hurt people hurt people, right?
Mm.
Hurt people hurt people.
Right.
And it's true. You know, it's this, most hurt that people cause to other people comes from a place of hurt. And a lot of times they don't know they're doing it. They're just hurting.
Yeah.
And so with kids, it can be difficult. It can be like, you know, slow down. Let's process what you're dealing with, right? What is it? What's going on? What hurts right now? What are you struggling with? And maybe you're not listening to me, or you're you don't see the good things that I do. So, dude, I'm not playing, man. Parenting's tough because we suck sometimes as people, right? Like, I can get distracted with the best of them, but teaching kids that one of the biggest ones in my home was when arguments occur, right? If there's a situation where I say, hey, you were asked to do this, and this happens, dude, when kids hit like 15, 16, and 17, they get real combative, boys especially.
Yeah.
And I think it happens with girls a little earlier, but it's like you say, hey, I told you to do this, and you said you were going to do it. And you know, and what they're feeling is they know they've got accountability coming, right? They know it's rolling down the lane, but they don't like it. They feel justified in the decision that they made, and they really don't like you bringing any attention to it and calling them out. Mm-hmm. And so they'll turn back and they'll say something snarky and fast and quick witted that you're just like, what? And it's like, but being able to say, okay, look. You know, I'm not going to do this with you, right? Because as the parent, and I think this kind of speaks into even the first topic we were talking about, as the parent, you're in control of that conversation.
Yeah.
That is your conversation you're having.
Right.
So if that conversation goes off the rails, you better look back at it and ask why you let it go off the rails, how you let it go off the rails, and how to stop letting it go off the rails. Because kids learn more from watching you and seeing what you do than they're ever going to learn from the brilliant nuggets of wisdom you tell them every day of their lives.
That's very true.
And it's monkey see, monkey do. It is I heard you say a lot of great things, but you taught me how to be a verbal boxer, right? You taught me how to spar verbally with the best of them. And so learning to the biggest one, like I was saying, is when we have one of those situations, at the point that I realize that I've let this conversation go off the rails as the parent, I'm going to stop it. I'm going to say, okay, this conversation's over. We'll talk about this later, right? And I don't mean 3 weeks later. I mean, you come back, and I typically would come back with, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have allowed that conversation to devolve like that. That's my fault.
Mm.
And for me, it was demonstrating humility in authority, because there's a great deal of humility in authority. As a matter of fact, I could argue that humility without authority, I mean, authority without humility is just power. And that's toxic, right? Not because power or being stronger is toxic, but because the amoralistic or the amoral application of power, it doesn't consider who it's being applied to. The hammer doesn't worry how the nail feels. So it's a tricky thing. And what the kids learn from that is the kids learn that they are valuable enough to be apologized to, that they matter.
They're heard. Yeah.
They're heard. And if eventually it'll be a matter of which one of you comes back first. Which one of you is going to come and say, I'm sorry, first? Hmm. And the kid will learn that they get to take that burden and set it down. I wish I'd learned it at 15, honestly, because it's a wonderful life skill. it's awesome being able to say, you know what, this has really got me worked up right now. I'm going to set it down and apologize for thinking I'm too big for my britches, and I shouldn't, you know, I probably shouldn't have reacted that way. I apologize. Mm. And I can't think of it's a critical skill to teach children. And it also helps teach them the same humility. It teaches them accountability, and it teaches them there's a problem, there's a solution to pain. And it's not running around like a chicken with your head cut off, or it's not swinging. It's not lashing out. The lashing out just makes you feel worse. The solution is sacrificing short-term gains for long-term rewards. Hmm. So, in relationship. So, anyway.
Master and commander of your own emotions.
right?
Everything, yeah, plays all that.
And your destiny, right? Right. Yeah. Well, I think we've gotten emotional enough, and we could probably beat that to death for another hour or two if we wanted, but I think we can drop that one there.
Okay.
You feel good with that?
Yeah, I think we have some good things. You know, it's a very big topic, so
it is a huge topic.
I know. I'm pretty sure we're going to approach this, maybe get a different perspective.
But, yes. Yes, 100%. And I'm, again, you know, we are all people. We all make mistakes, man. It's better to teach how to. If you try to teach kids that they can't, they're not, they're never going to trip. That's just unrealistic. You teach them to fall forward and to get up, right? I really like that concept. I think it was Denzel Washington I heard talking about it, saying fall forward, right?
He says a lot of great things.
He says a lot of great things, yeah. Doesn't he? Pretty wise guy. For real. No, he does, though. He seems to be a very grounded gentleman, for sure.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, I don't know him. We're not friends or anything. But, yeah.
No, if he ever wants to come on and talk about it.
Yeah, just let us know.
Yeah.
All right. We'll fly you down. Well.
Coach.
Yeah.
Coach.
Economy class. Right. Right.
That's how you know we're serious.
Go easy. Go easy. Yeah. No, I'm playing. Well. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll see if we can work something up, because I would like that. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about it. Maybe we could bring one of my kids in. I've only got one that's over 18, so I'm not going to subject my minor children to cameras, but I'm more than willing to trick my 18-year-old into coming in here and sitting down if we can accomplish it.
Oh, yeah.
That could be an interesting conversation. But, yeah. He's 18. He knows everything. Mm-hmm. Right? You remember how it was at 18.
Well, you know, you don't have a trick on him. I mean, you know him.
Yeah, you remember that it's like, hey, teenagers, hurry up. Move out. Hurry, do it now while you still know everything. And I say that. He is actually very good at listening. He's learning. He's learned very well to listen. It's like, son, I get where you're going, but pump your brakes for a second. You know, just... Let me give you a couple of paths that I see that are possible. Oh, I hadn't thought of that one. Okay, sounds like a better option. That's like I said, it's a life skill I wish I had picked up before 25.
30. Life skill. The old man does know something. He's been around right. for a year or two.
Right, right. This is in his first rodeo. But, all right, well. I think we're good on time. You have anything else you want to tackle before we wrap up?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for the time. I hope you have a great night and stay safe in the snow tomorrow. I've got a four-wheel drive, so I may swing by and laugh at you and let you watch me drive away.
Okay, so poke holes in your tires.
Right. That might actually help. Right? I'm fine. All right, sir. Well, thank you very much, and hope you have a great night.